The modern workplace has a fundamental problem: dehumanization. Despite improved physical conditions since the industrial era, today's workers often feel like cogs in someone else's machine. Surprisingly, Karl Marx's analysis of workplace alienation remains relevant despite his discredited economic theories. Consider Dolores, an HR manager whose once autonomous operation was centralized by distant headquarters. Her team went from feeling ownership, our business, to merely following group policy. Even senior partners like Barbara, despite their power and compensation, feel commoditized. "I feel like a cog in the machine," she admitted, surprised to realize it was technically her machine. While business schools traditionally focus on economics and psychology, philosophy provides the missing perspective by addressing what truly enables human flourishing beyond material wealth or positive feelings. Philosophy matters because it addresses what makes us fully human, in contrast to being treated as tools in organizational machinery. In a world where 85% of employees report feeling disengaged, this perspective offers a revolutionary approach to leadership. Aristotle and Nietzsche offer contrasting paths to workplace fulfillment. Aristotle advocated virtues as the middle way between extremes: courage between rashness and cowardice, good friendship between constant flattery and criticism. This balance emerges through reasoned judgment, which many modern workplaces suppress when they value managers for financial vulnerability or pressure salespeople to get numbers up regardless of consequences. Nietzsche instead urges us to reinvent values through self-awareness, understanding our true drives rather than conforming to others' expectations. His thought experiment asks, if your life were to repeat endlessly, would you curse this fate or embrace it? Organizations need both approaches: Nietzschean spaces for bold experimentation alongside Aristotelian environments for stability and improvement. The Buddha provides wisdom beyond competition, diagnosing suffering as arising from fear, greed, and the delusion of separateness. This siege mentality parallels modern strategies, us against them thinking. When organizations embrace connectedness over competition, they create value through collaboration rather than capturing it through dominance. Argentina's Malbec miracle transformed its wine industry through collective action, while ARM's semiconductor ecosystem thrives because companies recognize that exploiting bargaining power would destroy their shared value. Corporate performance is fundamentally a return on truth rather than effort. Economic value comes from knowing what competitors don't, especially about market responses. The true bottom line is how quickly a firm learns compared to rivals. Three legendary investors, Peter Lynch, Warren Buffett, and George Soros, demonstrate this principle. Despite different methods, they share key philosophies: trusting first-hand observations over market gossip, resisting emotional contagion, approaching risk positively, Buffett being greedy when others are fearful, rejecting rigid plans, embracing experimentation, preferring clarity over precision, and challenging orthodoxy. These practices align with Karl Popper's critical rationalism. Popper showed that scientific discoveries emerge through deductive falsification, not inductive verification. Most business theories incorrectly assume there's a right way to succeed, as seen in concepts like excellence and best practice, a category mistake treating strategy as application rather than search for knowledge. True rationality belongs not to minds trying to prove something, but to those open to innovation, alternative viewpoints, and the discomfort of being disconcerted. Most leadership theories divide people into leaders and followers, undermining our sense that who we are and what we do matters, the fundamental sense of person-led. Max Perutz exemplifies a different approach. As chairman of the world's most successful biological research laboratory from 1962-1979, he kept administration minimal, believing creativity cannot be organized. He spent 90% of his time working alongside colleagues, fostering independence and treating everyone respectfully. His lab produced 9 Nobel Prizes and numerous other honors. The ancient Greeks understood that humans are shaped by those around them. We become whom we spend time with. Plutarch used exemplum, moral example, to instill character, believing people can change habits through reason by selecting role models. John Rawls's veil of ignorance thought experiment provides a framework for fairness. People choose principles without knowing their own position, ensuring impartiality. This challenges management theories that treat employees as means rather than ends. Drawing on philosophers Hobbes and Kant, we can reimagine authority not as a right, but as a gift bestowed by others for their benefit. Hobbes challenges the notion that authority flows downward, arguing that in non-dictatorships, authority is delegated upward by consent. Kant refocuses us on seeing others as ends in themselves rather than means. True empowerment requires inverting conventional approaches. Instead of suggestion schemes, create environments where people naturally do what needs doing. Rather than special meetings, hire people who consider speaking up their duty. People are creative risk takers in their private lives. Leadership's job is creating space for these qualities at work. Nandu Nankishore's approach at Nestle Philippines exemplifies this model. Taking over a company in crisis, he asked questions of those doing the work rather than dictating solutions. By removing physical barriers, bringing functions together, and modeling collaboration, he created an environment where empowered people flourished, achieving a remarkable turnaround within 18 months. The typical corporate town hall follows a predictable pattern. The CEO presents new strategies with branded slides, announces cultural changes with catchy slogans, takes few questions, and instructs managers to cascade information downward. This approach has become the dominant model for driving collective action, yet it implicitly prescribes what to think, feel, and do. A tell approach that ultimately destroys creativity, diversity, and genuine commitment. Drawing on Martin Buber's philosophy, we can distinguish between two interaction modes, I-it and I-thou. In I-it mode, we relate to others objectively, gathering data for our own ends. I-thou represents genuine relationship where both parties encounter each other fully and are transformed through reciprocity. The ingredients for successful encounters include being present without distractions, showing up as a person rather than a role, acknowledging incompleteness, and valuing relation over agreement. To create environments where encounter flourishes, try reframing meetings, reducing their number, eliminating agendas, starting with what's going on for you, being present, and sharing observations, feelings, thoughts, and aspirations. In a world of competing values, true leadership requires embracing moral complexity rather than hiding behind platitudes. Corporate value statements often feature truisms like putting clients first, while traditional human values like prudence, justice, and humility rarely appear. The real challenge lies in navigating moral dilemmas where values conflict. Transparency versus privacy, competition versus cooperation, honesty versus diplomacy, and courage versus safety. No perfect organization can achieve all genuine ideals simultaneously. The path forward isn't creating more value statements, but fostering moral curiosity and dialogue. Ethically serious organizations encourage discussion, dissent, and debate, moving beyond compliance to conscientious inquiry. Leadership becomes less about having answers and more about creating environments where people exercise moral agency with both freedom and responsibility. Remember, even under authority, we retain choice. Freedom isn't acting without consequences, but choosing without compulsion and accepting the results. An empowered person recognizes what makes them flourish and acts accordingly. The profound leadership lesson: once aware of these conditions, your actions determine whether you flourish, whether you truly lead.